Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love Another Podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal, coming to you live from Scottsdale, Arizona, where I'm at the golf tournament. You knew that. Well, maybe you don't know that. Maybe people don't follow me on Twitter or read what I write, just listen to the podcast. I'm in Scottsdale, covering the golf tournament. Did I take the train here? Yes, I did. So this episode is going to simply be me telling you what the last 4 or 5 days have been like. I'm going to splice in some interviews I've done. It's going to be all golf-centric. And first, I'm just going to tell the story of how I got here. So a lot of people, like, wait. You took the train to Arizona? So let me explain myself. I like the train. I enjoy traveling by train. It's probably my favorite way to travel. I am aware that there are flights on airplanes that can take you all the way from Champaign to Phoenix. You could go Champaign to Dallas to Phoenix if you wanted. Or I could drive to Chicago, or I could drive to Indy, or I could drive to St. Louis. And fly there and get there quickly. I am aware of this. I'm even aware that you can take a road trip and drive and get there faster than if you're going by train. I'm completely aware of these things. However, I'm a creative. Okay, my brain is a little weird, and I'm just one of those people who enjoys making a journey of it. Here's the best way to explain myself, okay? I left Wednesday at 10:30 a.m. from Champaign, train to Chicago, had about an hour and 20-minute layover, and then got on the train, took the train all the way to Chicago to Flagstaff. That train is like 31 hours and 42 minutes, Chicago to Flagstaff. So yes, I'm sleeping overnight on the train, and people are like, why would you do that to yourself? And I'm like, why was it not longer? What would I be doing Wednesday? Say I was flying out Thursday night and I was getting into Phoenix Thursday night, which is when I got to Phoenix. I got to Flagstaff and I rented a car and drove to Phoenix. So say I was getting into Phoenix Thursday night, what would I have done on Wednesday and maybe even in the morning on Thursday? I would have sat at my desk and I would have had my laptop open in front of me and I would have either been researching something or writing something about the Illini. What did I do on the train? I sat with a desk in front of me and I had my laptop open and I wrote and researched Illini stuff for 31 hours and 42 minutes. Minus the time I was sleeping, from Chicago to Flagstaff. And I looked out the window and I saw the plains of Kansas and I saw the Red Rocks State Park in New Mexico, not Red Rocks in Colorado, Red Rocks State Park in New Mexico, and all these canyons and all these buttes and all these different views. And it's very fun for me to sit there listening to classical music in my ears and writing and researching the Illini. I had so much fun in those 31 hours and 42 minutes. So that's the reason I do it. If I can go somewhere by train and I can take the time, I enjoy it, gets my creative juices flowing. I've always told people, if you enjoy what I write, you enjoy some of the creative things I do or say or references I make, it comes out of moments like that. It just does. That's what gets my brain unclogged and freely flowing. and I can't wait to do it again. I'll tell one story and then we'll actually get to the golf. There's, you know, somebody asked me a question like, what, who are you traveling with? It's just a bunch of old people. And I'm like, yes, it is. If you've ever traveled on Amtrak, you know what I'm about to say. The trains are true. Yes. Old people and the Amish or Mennonites. I'm not sure if they're Amish or Mennonites. I'm actually not sure what the difference is there. But I don't know the rules, the Amish rules. I guess you can travel by train, but not by car, maybe. Honestly, I don't know. All I know is that when you get on a long Amtrak train, they're going to be 30% Amish folks. I enjoy them very much. I'm not, again, like the three people who know Amtrak travel are kind of probably chuckling at this, but if you go to the observation car on an Amtrak on a long road, half the observation car is tables where you can sit, and half the observation car is seats with a glass that goes all the way up the ceiling, so you can just look up, out, and around at everything as you roll through the mountains. And those tables at the end are kind of the Amish section. I don't know. It's not like that. It's just they bring their food and they pack it, and then they all at lunch and at dinner they go down to the tables in the observation car, and they have a big old family, like 30 people having dinner together. I enjoy joining them when there's an open table. I don't eat their food. I just enjoy sitting there at one of those tables and writing, which I did. The thing about the Amish and or Mennonites and or both, if it's the same thing, they break out into song. Not kidding. Maybe it's the spirit led them kind of thing, and they feel they need to sing. I respect it, and I love it, and I recorded some of it. I hope that's not intrusive to their culture, but I wanted people to hear what it's like. So this is me on Thursday around lunchtime, I think. Sometime Thursday, I was sitting in the observation car at the desk writing one of those articles you read, and listening to this. Shout out to my man with the big long beard who was hitting those harmony parts. That's what's the vibe on Amtrak in the middle of, I don't know, where are we? Probably New Mexico somewhere. That's the vibe. And I love it. It's my thing. Okay, enough about my trip and more about the golf. So I've been here for the first three rounds. First two, three interviews I did, I just threw up as kind of like bonus episodes in the podcast feed to get them out there. This one, I wanted to set them up and talk about them a little bit. This first one is actually from Saturday, not from yesterday. It's from Saturday after the second round, and I talked to Adrien Dumont-Deschassart from Belgium, who is, you know, has a real chance today to be an NCAA champion. He's played well. He's our top player. He's going to finish in the top five on PGA Tour U, which is going to send him straight to the Corn Ferry Tour, which is the minor league tour underneath the PGA Tour. They did that a couple years ago where the top five golfers could earn their way directly onto that tour by finishing in the top five of these standings each year. He's currently second, and with the way he's playing, and you know, even if he has a bad round today, he's going to stay in the top five. And so he will be headed to he'll turn professional next week and go play on that tour and even have a chance to play his way onto the PGA Tour for next year. So that's the benefits, why they set this up, to stop kids from leaving college golf to go try to qualify for these tours and go to Q school and everything else. They made it so if they stay in college golf their senior year, they have a chance to earn their way directly onto that KFT. So anyway, this is my conversation with Adrian, and then we'll get to the talks from yesterday.
So first, I have to ask the silly question, which is, I told Tommy that I had come up with the nickname for you guys of Cool in the Gang, just because his last name is Cool. And I know you're from Belgium, so you probably don't know Cool in the Gang, the early 80s disco group from the United States. Are you at all familiar with the,
nope,
the group Cool in the Gang?
Never heard of it.
What year were you born?
2000.
This is 20 years before you were born. Do you take any offense to me using the term Cool in the Gang, or should this be Adrian Steen?
Okay. I don't care.
You don't care. Okay, I mean, the first question is, really, I mean, you and Tommy both decided to use your fifth year comeback. I mean, is this kind of why? Like, was this in mind when you did it?
I mean, it was, but like, I knew I wasn't really ready to turn pro.
Uh-huh.
I just knew I could, like, still learn a lot from, you know, being part of the team and playing under Coach Mo. And, I mean, that's what led to my the reason why I stayed back. And also with PGA Tour U, I knew I would have I would start in a pretty high in the ranking. And
yeah,
I knew that was a possibility to get my Corn Ferry card through that as well.
So I don't want to look ahead to that, but since you're two, I think mathematically it would be really hard for you to fall to six. So if you do, I mean, are you straight to professional and – like, you get the card immediately and you can go into a event in a few weeks kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the first event is June 8th.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'll turn pro after this tournament no matter what.
Yeah.
Hopefully get in the top five. And then, start on the Corn Ferry right away.
I mean, that's just immediate move out of your apartment and...
Yeah, I'm probably not going to move out till like later.
Uh-huh.
I have my apartment till end of July, but I have to move out at some point, yeah.
Okay. So since I found out yesterday that you and Tommy live with Caleb Griffin...
Yep.
Who gets more nervous? You when Caleb has a 41-yard field goal, or Caleb watching you... Let's say on 18 when you're 75 yards out with your third shot and you got to stuff it close. Who gets more nervous for the other guy?
I don't know, but I'd say probably we do.
Yeah?
Because, I mean, it depends, obviously, like, if they're winning by a lot playing for goal, if it's pretty tight and he got to make a field goal to win. But, like, in golf, I mean, there's a lot of golf left. I mean, if he was the last hole and I had to make a pin down to win, he'd probably be more nervous than we are. But it just depends on the situation.
Tommy told me yesterday that Caleb struggles with the driver, and you would think that a field goal kicker, like that should be their mentality, right? It's just like right down the pipe. What have you helped him with his game at all?
I haven't played with him in a couple of months, but I don't think that his driver fits him. I told him, I was like, wait a little bit, I'll see if I can get you something. But
there you go.
I think he just hits the big slices, and probably because the shaft doesn't match his speed. But.
Have you ever tried to kick a field goal? Has he ever taken you out there?
I have never yet. I'll try at some point, because, I mean, I played soccer growing up, so I probably believe that I could probably make a 30-yarder. But.
Right. Let's talk about, since, you know, I just watched 18, so your decision, you're in the rough, over water. You know, it's basically, it's a par five for the membership, but it's playing as a par four here.
Yep.
So, what are you thinking when you're standing there in the rough looking over the water?
I mean, the lie really wasn't bad in itself, but like, I feel like I would have probably bailed out to the left and hit in the bunker, and I just laying up to a 70-yard shot was going to be, I mean, pretty easy as well. And going for it, I mean, if I do hit it high on the club facing, it goes in the water, I got to drop all the way back over there and that's going to make a big number. And I truly believe that I could make par that way. And worst case, I was going to make bogey. And bogey doesn't really kill you. It's only day two, not even day four.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Coach said when I asked him the same question that, like, you know, if it's the final round and you need a birdie, obviously.
If I need a birdie, I would have gone for it. Yeah.
Yes. But your decision making is take the big number out of play.
Yeah.
And you trust that 70-yard Yeah. What do you hit on that? You 60-degree wedge?
My 58-degree wedge.
You're 58.
Yeah, I mean, I still hit a good shot, but, like, I think on average I probably hope to hit it to, like, 12 feet. And I hopefully make the putt after that.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, overall, this is for you guys to go -7. I mean, we've been here 3 years. There haven't been many low numbers like that.
No, I mean, it's pretty solid. To just come along as a team. Yeah. Having four guys shooting under par is pretty impressive. I mean, I know we play in the morning, so obviously a little easier than playing in the afternoon.
Sure.
But you still got to go out there and just play solid. And it's kind of a course where it's very, I mean, it's easy to make a couple bogeys in a row or make a big number if you're a little distracted or if you play too aggressive.
Yep.
As a team, you just kind of want to play smart golf. And I think a lot of guys have made a lot of good up and downs today, and it's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what like guys like Ross Steelman and them do today, I mean, you're going to be pretty high up on the leaderboard at the end of the day. So, I mean, there has to be some thought toward the individual versus the team stuff. I know you guys think toward team, and you're trying to get in the 15 tomorrow, 8 by Monday, you know, that type of thing. But how much are you also thinking of your individual position?
I mean, I'm looking good right now, but I've learned that no matter what I do, I just got to keep playing my game and be who I am.
Yeah.
If I do that, you know, result will take care of itself. And sometimes, you know, you win that way. I mean, if I get beat by someone else, I go out there and shoot 500, there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah.
I just, you know, play my game, play the right way. And if I do that, we'll see where that goes.
You think you'll hear from Thomas Dietrich or Thomas Peters? You know, the Belgian connection here,
I've been in touch a little bit. I mean, they're very supportive of the team and what I do, so it's been very cool. I mean, I texted Dietrich this morning asking where he was going to play his qualifier for US Open. And he told me he was actually playing the other one that I played.
Okay.
So I was like, maybe we're playing the same way, we can play practice round, but he's playing the one in Springfield, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just cool to be able to, you know, reach out to them and ask them questions if I have any.
And then last question is, what are your thoughts on the crowd here? You know, there's been a lot of Illini fans, a lot of noise. When, you know, it's kind of funny, like Vanderbilt to make a putt and there's a smattering of applause. And then I mean, you'll make a birdie and it's really loud.
I mean, it's been epic. I mean, I really didn't expect that. Might be a little too loud because we're not really used to. I mean, especially when it's round two, it would make sense if it's smash play. But, I mean, I'm not going to complain about it. It's nice to see a lot of fans out there. And, that could have helped us play good as well today. So.
Yeah, that was kind of where I was going with that. Is that, you know, is it strange to, you know, to have that? Do you hear the noise, you know, when Tommy makes a putt in front of you?
I mean, it's nice. So then you know he made a birdie or he made a good par. They get very loud. So.
Yeah.
That way you kind of know and you have an idea of how everyone's playing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great playing today.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks.
So now we have reached Sunday. Which was yesterday as I'm recording this. I have these two interviews to play. Sunday was another good round. I think if you just took the scores from Sunday's round, Illinois would have been in fourth, I think, of the 30 teams. So Illini had the best score on Saturday and the fourth best score on Sunday, which is why we're leading and in a good spot to advance to match play. And I loved both of these interviews. This first one is with Mike Small. He gets into, it's about 8 minutes long, and he gets into, like, how he'd coach other sports. Like, I had a lot of questions for him of, like, hey, what would, you know, if you're a basketball coach, what do you do here? I can guarantee you're going to love this. When you share this podcast episode with other friends, you're going to tell them, hey, fast forward past all the terrain stuff and get to that Mike Small interview. So let's get to that Mike Small interview.
With your team, you think you're more impressed by the 7-under yesterday to surge into the lead or the 4-under today to hang in there and play toe-to-toe with everyone?
Well, I think there's different expectations. We came out yesterday with a little more fire in our belly because we were upset with the day before.
Yeah.
Today, you can kind of come out with a full belly sometimes.
Sure.
And we didn't do that. We played solid golf, which I told them I was happy with.
Yeah. You just, it just seemed a little bit, I mean, this is a compliment, like cruise control today.
Mm-hmm. That's what you want. That's the way the game's played correctly.
Yeah.
And, you keep the hole in front of you. You control your ball flight. You play the strong sides of holes. That's the way it's supposed to be played.
Yep. Are there any holes? It looked like from my observation from when I watched, that 17 is like a green light hole. Like, all right, it's shorter. You're going to have an iron with a chance at it. Go at it. That's where I saw everybody like aiming right at it. Do you set it up like that? Like, hey, this is a gettable pin on 17. There's birdies to be had, or is it like time where you're at, where they're on the fairway, what you feel?
Yeah, we don't. I know some coaches sit there and go through the whole round where pins are, and how to tell the guys how to play certain holes and certain weeks and days and tournaments. I don't. There's a way to play the game of golf.
Sure.
And I teach them the way to play the game of golf, and you ebb and flow with different situations, things. But sometimes there's smart golf. People think smart golf is always play conservative golf, and that's not anything close to the truth.
Yeah.
Sometimes smart golf is very aggressive golf.
Sure.
Sometimes it's conservative golf. You have to weigh the situation, weigh what your strengths are, kind of player you are, what's your predominant shot, where's the pin, what situation, all that stuff's got. Yeah. A quarterback in NFL goes through progressions, and it gets the line, goes through his progressions, and he drops back to pass, he goes through his progressions,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
Well, and we talk about it all the time in golf, you go through your progressions.
Yes.
And
yes.
So the situation is, and that's what we had to, and that's what dictates it. And the guys feel that they want to take it a little stronger and hit the pin. Well, then they know that they've gone through it the correct way, and that if it's something that we disagree with later, we'll discuss it. But
sure.
But again, I defer to them the way to play. You know, if I was a basketball coach, I'd be on the bench a lot of the time letting them play, because you cover stuff in practice and let them play the game. I'm not up there screaming rebound, because they should know to friggin' rebound.
yes. Okay, so Jackson here on 18. I don't know if you even – I think you stayed back with Adrian Cedar. So he fell into the little wedge between the mow line above the bunker. He was almost in a V. It was just stuck. And I think he did the smart thing, just chop it out up above and took his bogey, took his medicine. Otherwise, he's chopping toward the water, toward the bunkers, everything else. What do you teach a guy when he walks up and sees, like, oh, my God. You know, it's a mow line, but it was right where the mow line had gone almost down to the dirt when they cut it, and he's just stuck.
He wants to be quiet over here.
Imagine that.
What do I tell the guys? I tell the guys, you positively, in this game, you positively, optimistically assess a shot, and you're thinking what could go wrong or what could go right. When you hit the shot, you're thinking about what you want to have happen.
Yeah.
But when you read the shot and you get over it, you have to know, you have to be honest with yourself, what could go wrong here?
Yeah.
If I didn't pull this out.
Yeah.
That's what causes you to steer away from a hole to play more conservative, and I think it sounds like he did the right thing.
Yeah, and for a sophomore, in his, you know, this is the biggest stage he's been on in his career. You know, what's it like to, you know, I'm relating it to me of like, I stand over the shot, I'm playing a good round on 18, I'm stuck in a V because the mower was.
Yeah, Robert, but you don't train for this stuff.
He does.
So
I definitely don't.
He's got a high learning curve. He's very cerebral. He listens. He's very coachable. He knows the best way to play this thing is to not try to play great, just play golf.
Yeah.
And not put so much pressure on yourself. And that's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
But we talk about it, and, he's going to be really good. And he's good now, but he has to stay in the moment and let his golf ball do the talking and just keep doing what he does.
When I talked to you in New York City at Madison Square Garden, when I bumped into you, my question was about Jackson. And it was, like, what did you see? Like, how did, you know, this was not a kid high on the golf rankings or anything else. First thing you said was athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when you see an athlete like that, you know it's a golfer. So, what do you see? Is it the swing? Like, what do you sense in that?
You don't really know 100%, but a lot of people say they're athletes.
Yeah.
And they're really not.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They want to be athletes. They say that. But when you see him, you see his body, you see his athleticism.
Uh-huh.
And then it comes from a family. His dad was an athlete. Dad played college baseball. So that all ties together. He's been around it. He's seen it. And that's athlete, the combination of the two. So, you know, I got a kid coming next year whose parents were both downhill Olympic skiers. They know what it's like to train and be there. So you grew up in a certain culture, a certain household, or things are – and then you multiply that or add that to the athlete, speed, the endurance, the explosion.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, athlete. That's what I saw him. And then you just take a chance.
Yeah.
And he's a good kid and a good student.
Yeah.
We have to have good students. I don't want to worry about keeping kids eligible. That's not something I want ever want to worry about. So it all matched. And then sometimes you just got to take a chance.
Sure.
I mean, I would think a lot of the most college coaches in every sport take more chance in recruiting than people think they do.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the top blue bloods in sports and Duke basketball and Kentucky basketball can get for sure guys, but you still don't ever know.
Uh-huh.
So you just go with faith, man. Go with it.
Okay, so
and then hope your culture overtakes their own agenda.
Right. So fourth round tomorrow. Pepperdine is actually making a run. When I last checked, they were like two back.
Uh-huh.
But you know, you'll be either one or two. So What's your mindset going into a fourth round like this?
We can all play our game.
Doesn't change based on where you're
at. No, it's going to be an interesting dynamic tomorrow. We're going to have some guys playing individual, trying to win the individual thing too. Uh-huh. So the best way they're going to win that is to not try to do that. Maybe it comes down to the end.
Uh-huh.
But to stay, keep playing the game we play the game that we talk and preach. Uh-huh. And same with the team.
Just so it doesn't change. Like the only time it changes is if like you're chasing and you need birdies and you got to fire at pins, or what is it?
It depends on the situation. I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll discuss that. And right now they got to stay in their own little arena, stay in their little world, and get ready to play as hard as and solid as they can tomorrow.
Because you got to know that if I'm talking to a football coach at halftime, mm-hmm. he's going to be like, "Look, we're down 17. We got to fire.
Right.
We got to throw the ball."
That may happen tomorrow. That may not.
Yeah, you just seem to consistently have this like, no, it's individual shots on individual holes. Play the game. You know how to way to play the game.
Well, it's fundamental golf. Football. You want to move the ball and you want to establish a game plan. You don't come out and running does it. You don't come out throwing it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in golf, you come out, you get the correct size of holes, you get your distance, you get you lag punch your ball, and then when it starts rolling, then you maybe if you're feeling good, then you squeeze it in there and you get a little run going. Then you shoot 6, 7, 8 under par. But the hardest way to shoot under par is to try to shoot under par.
Yeah.
That's the hardest. The hole shrinks up on you. You start forcing a a round peg in a square hole, and the hole gets tighter. So you just don't do that. You just play fundamental.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I relate a lot of stuff to other sports all the time with the guys. You know,
and
basketball. You know, you don't get out. You don't get out. Don't forget who you are. Uh-huh. Just play, and then when things get going well, roll it. And if they don't, you just retrench and get back to what you do.
Okay, then I have to ask a question. If this was basketball, I was going to blow up a former coach, but I won't say anything. There have been situations you're up 8 with 3 minutes to go and it's stall ball. Let's just get this thing over the line. If you were a basketball coach, you're up 8. How would you be coaching?
No, you don't protect. That's different than your game plan. You play solid golf.
Yeah.
If the shot calls and it's a knock one in there, it's your perfect number and the pin's in a start right spot, you knock it down and make birdie if you're up 8.
Yeah.
You don't sit there and bail out and try. The easiest way to make par a lot of times is to try to make birdie, but you don't recklessly make birdie.
Yes.
Now, if the hole doesn't call for itself, it doesn't fit up to your eye, and it's a different deal in the wind, the pin, and there's trouble to the right,
uh-huh.
Well, then, no, you do not take it at the pin. You take it away from it, and you make your par.
Yeah.
In this game, you eliminate bogeys. That's what you do. And defense is just as important as offense in this game. And then people think you just fire pins, who makes the most birdies wins. And if you look at the major championships over time and look at the best players in college and the pros for sure, they win by tournaments by other people losing.
Yeah.
They don't go win them as much. Then they sometimes do, but they let other people lose.
Fascinating. Thanks, Coach. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
And finally here, I interviewed yesterday, that's Sunday, I interviewed sophomore Jackson Buchanan. So as of this morning, Jackson is 7th at the NCAA finals. It's hard to describe for a sophomore to be 7th for someone who wasn't. I mean, this is, how do I describe it? Jackson Buchanan is Devin Witherspoon, okay? He, as he explains here, he didn't pick up golf till 8th grade. He was going to be a baseball player. He wasn't really this huge recruit. Wasn't really known. I mean, a lot of these kids have been playing junior events since they were in kindergarten, and he's not that kid. And now here he is as a sophomore, 7th at NCAAs with, guys who are going to be long-time PGA Tour members all around him. And here, his sophomore year, his first time ever at the NCAAs, and he's on the front page of the leaderboard. It's just like the names below him. It's incredible what he's doing. So I want to talk to him. Great kid. I love this interview. Let's get to it.
First, I mean, right now you're T7 at the NCAA championships as a sophomore. Like, is that weird to hear me say that? I know it's about the team, but still, is that a little surreal?
That's a hard question to answer because I have come such a long way since I picked up the game in 8th grade. But also I have a lot of confidence in who I am as a golfer. So it's cool, but I wouldn't say I expected it because I try not to expect anything. But surreal wouldn't be the word, but cool would be the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool would be the word.
Yeah, I mean, I want to. I'm hoping the scoreboard changes here because your name. There we go. I mean, that's your name on a Golf Channel scoreboard at the champion. That's got to be. That's got to be crazy. I mean, how old are you now? 20?
21.
21. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's. It's got to be surreal.
It's,
yeah.
It's,
I'm not trying to build you up too much.
No, no, no. I'm trying to stay in the moment, but it's it's cool. It's I mean, I've come a long way. That's all I can say about it. I've come a long way since I started this game.
The first time I talked to Mike Small about you, he described you as an athlete. So, and I think he said that you, your family's athletic.
Yeah.
Did he say you started in baseball? Was it baseball?
Yeah.
What are all sports? It was much everything.
Baseball was my best sport. I thought I was going to go to college and play baseball. My dad played baseball in college, and it was kind of my sport. And it's just funny how I found my way into golf, and I kind of picked it up naturally. I was good right when I started. Good as in, like, natural.
Right.
So,
but a lot of these guys have been playing since they were five.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so, I mean,
your first real year competing is
it's a sport
year,
where athleticism can help you, but it doesn't mean you're going to be good.
Right.
Whereas, like, basketball, if you're 6'5 and you're a freak, you know, you, there's a lot more advantage. Whereas there's a lot of players out here that aren't as athletic as me, but the way they think and the way they play, it's that's good for them too. So,
so how long was it before you were playing in like junior events and things like that?
Probably. So I picked it up summer, headed into eighth grade, and I started playing junior golf pretty quickly within two or three months of
picking up a club.
Yeah. So the first tournament, junior golf tournament I played in was this one in Chattahoochee. I shot 87-79 in my first tournament ever. So I was like, maybe I can figure this game out.
79 months after you picked up a club for the first time.
Yeah, no,
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty
crazy. And so what was it like for your family? If your dad played baseball in college and you played baseball growing up, I mean, you know, was your family like, hey, you're really good at this? This should be your sport? Or how did it work?
Well, they didn't. They don't know much about golf. My dad knows about golf now, but he didn't really know much about it. So they didn't know if I was good or not. But the head pro at my golf course was talking to my parents, and they were like, this kid's a he picked
it
up.
Yeah.
It didn't. I mean, I wasn't quite good yet.
I get it. But he can see.
So my dad was like, I mean, it's your choice. You have to pick because baseball and golf are the same season, and it looks like you're falling in love with golf and losing interest in baseball. And he was right. So he's like, I'm not going to waste this money on baseball when you're in love with golf. So
right.
Like,
I get it.
I agree. Let's just play golf. And that's what I did.
So when did the recruiting start? Like, was it not until really senior year?
It was, gosh, it was probably right end of sophomore year, early junior year.
Okay.
That's when I started kind of getting good enough.
Uh-huh.
I obviously had so much to learn, but it was probably early junior year. That's when coaches started reaching out.
And what was it about Illinois? What led you here?
Coach Small.
Yeah.
And their previous success. I mean,
right.
They were the best school to recruit me, and they're a top two program in the country every year. So.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk through that bad break over there. I mean, you're basically sitting in a V, like in a wedge. It was like a mow line, and
the grasses were different, and I was screwed.
Yeah,
I mean, if I had a good lie, I mean, I could have got into 15 feet maybe, but it's such a tough shot. So I was like, maybe I can land this in the rough, and it'll trickle down.
Let it trickle out.
So I think I played it fine. It was the up and down for bogey that I was proud of.
Yeah. So what do you like? I'm not an athlete, okay? Yeah. So I walk up to that, and I'm like, this is the worst break in the history of mankind for this thing to wedge down in there between these two
cuts.
It's
been a week where I've gotten bad breaks, and then you hit a shot, and you get a good break, and you're like, okay, that makes up for the bad break. So I was like, okay, maybe this is just
this is repayment for the hole out?
Yeah, that's literally what I was thinking. I was like, this is just making up for the good breaks I've had. And
And the hole out was when?
It was first round, third hole of the
third
tournament.
Third hole, okay. Yeah. Did it zip back into it, or did you
flew right in.
Flew in?
Yeah, from 115 yards.
They call that the block now, I guess.
Yeah, flew right in.
Like, that's great.
A little swish.
Did you take a little of the O-ring out?
No, it flew right in. Didn't touch anything.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, you know, good luck tomorrow. Is it intimidating of like, you know, this is a big stage, or is just,
no.
I mean, the way this coach coaches is just
golf. Illini golf, and the results take care of themselves in this game, so that's good.
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks
I appreciate
for taking the time.
It. No, thank you.
You are now caught up. It's Monday morning as I'm recording this. Illini teed off in about 3 hours. First place.
at NCAAs. I mean, anything can happen to match play. Let's just get to match play first, but it's really exciting out here. This is a lot of fun for me. I can just, you know, it's just my fandom comes alive. I'll just say it that way. You know that I'm a golf guy, and you know I've always kind of followed this stuff, and you know, just to see the guys in orange and blue dominating all these warm weather schools is just fantastic to see. So I can't wait. Gonna get back out there. I'm gonna have more stuff coming up. That's it. That's the end of this episode. Let's go win a natty. Go Lions.